I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Internet Marketing. Brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. This is Internet Marketing. Now, before we roll, a request. We'd like some input on how we can improve the podcast. And we're running a survey over on the Site Visibility website. Take about 5 minutes of your time. It'd be really helpful to us because it will help us to continue to make your sort of podcasting experience as great as possible. If you want to help us out and go there, the page is sitevisibility.com/survey. We'd really appreciate your feedback. And again, that's sitevisibility.com/survey. And today, I'm joined by Chip Connolly, Strategic Advisor at Airbnb. Chip, how are you doing?
I'm great. Great to be with you, Andy. Thank you.
Well, thanks for joining us. Let's start off. Tell us a bit about yourself and what you're doing at Airbnb.
Sure. So I, for 30 years now, I've been a hotelier, which is an interesting wrinkle in my career, given that I am helping lead Airbnb with the founders at this point for the last 4 years. So I created boutique hotels, which are smaller, very design-oriented hotels. Created a company called Joie de Vivre Hotels based in San Francisco, California.
Yeah.
That was 30 years ago, and then created 52 boutique hotels. And sold the company about 6.5 to 7 years ago to a guy named John Pritzker, whose father started Hyatt, and still own hotels. I sold the management company and the brand, but I still own about a dozen hotels. But about 4 years ago, the founders of Airbnb asked me to join them to help them turn their little tech startup into a global hospitality giant.
Fantastic. Now, you write about psychology. Where does that sort of fit in with, you know, the hospitality business?
Well, you know, I think the most neglected fact in business is that we're all human. I mean, we sort of forget that fact as we look at org charts and we look at strategic plans and we look at budgets. The thing that actually sort of holds it all together is we are human beings, whether we're a guest or an employee, an investor. So I was not a psychology major in college, but there's been two major economic downturns in the last 15 years. Mm. One was the Great Recession a few years ago. And the one before that here in the San Francisco Bay Area was the dot-com bust. And then for the whole U.S. Post 9/11, travel to the U.S. Really dropped significantly for a couple of years. And we had a recession there as well.
Yeah.
So interestingly, when I was CEO of my company and I had 3,500 employees, I found that actually reading a psychology book was more helpful for me as a leader than it was to read a business book. And so the two psychologists that I followed that really helped me with my leadership were a guy named Abraham Maslow, who created the hierarchy of needs theory about 60 years ago. And Viktor Frankl, who was a psychologist in Austria, who ended up in a concentration camp with his family. They were Jewish.
Yeah.
And he wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning.
Yes.
So those two psychology thought leaders have actually influenced me and ended up leading me to writing. I've written 4 books, but my last 2 books were really psychology meets business books. One was called Peak, how great companies get their mojo from Maslow. And the other one was called Emotional Equations.
Wow. Now, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. What's the hierarchy of needs for customers and employees?
Yeah, if you were, so just a background on the hierarchy of needs, which is the theory that made Abraham Maslow famous. His premise was that we, as humans, have some basic needs in life. Let's call those physiological needs.
Yeah.
And once those are partially met, you go up and you have safety needs, which is the second level. The third level is social belonging needs. The fourth level is esteem needs. And then the fifth level is what he called self-actualization, or being all you can be.
Yeah.
If you were to take that hierarchy of needs pyramid and then translate it into something that's a little simpler with just three levels, there's basically three paradigms in life. There's survival at the base. There's success in the middle.
Yeah.
And then there's what I would call transformation at the top.
Yeah.
So that paradigm of what I call the transformation pyramid of survival at the base, success in the middle, and transform at the top. If you applied that to employees, an employee hierarchy of needs pyramid would have money at the base or compensation package, recognition in the middle, and meaning at the top. So in essence, the thing that actually creates a differentiator in a company is meaning. So, but the thing that we tend to measure and what can lead to an employee leaving quite often is they don't feel like they're well compensated or they're not making enough money to be able to pay their bills. That's the base of the pyramid. So in essence, the base of the pyramid is where the commodity happens. Mm. You got to get that right. But the companies that actually create the most loyal employees do it by actually addressing recognition needs and then meaning needs. And similarly, the pyramid for a customer, a hierarchy of need for them would be the base of the pyramid is having their expectations met. The middle of the pyramid is when they have their desires met and they feel like they're successful as a result of having their desires met.
Yes.
They're glad they chose that company. And at the peak of the pyramid is what creates transformation is when a customer has their unrecognized needs met. And what that really means, and Apple's, you know, a classic example of this, Apple never did focus groups. Steve Jobs didn't believe in focus groups. He basically said, listen, customers don't really know, or they can't, they actually know, but they can't articulate very well what it is they want at the peak of their pyramid. He said, at best, they can tell you what their desires are. And so companies that do a great job at the top of the pyramid here of understanding unrecognized needs have created some shorthand method of understanding, you know, almost be able to mind read their core customers in such a way that they deliver something to the customer that the customer really appreciated, but didn't even know would be possible.
That's amazing. Can you give me some examples of that, Chip?
Sure. I'll give you an example of one of my hotels. I created a hotel in downtown San Francisco called the Hotel Vitale. Mm. This was, we were creating this hotel 15, 16 years ago. At the time, we knew our shorthand way of understanding customers was every single one of the 52 boutique hotels we created came down to a basic premise, which was there's a magazine or maybe two magazines that would define the personality of the hotel we were creating. So this one hotel, so my first hotel, you know, 30 years ago was a hotel called the Phoenix, and it was based upon Rolling Stone magazine. But years later, the Vitale was a luxury hotel on the waterfront. We came up with two magazines, a magazine called Dwell, which is a modern design magazine, and a magazine called Real Simple, which is a lifestyle magazine about simplicity.
Yeah.
And the five adjectives we defined that we determined defined those two magazines and really became our touchstone for creating the hotel were modern, urbane, fresh, natural, and nurturing. Mm. Everything we did in creating that hotel came back to those five words. The thing that we did in that hotel that addressed we did a variety of things that addressed unrecognized needs, but let me give you one example. We chose to take 400 square feet up on the top penthouse level of the hotel and turn it into a yoga studio. Now, 15, 16 years ago, my investors looked at me and said, are you an idiot? That's your best real estate.
Yeah.
Your best real estate in the building. You're up on the top floor. You've got great views of the bay. You've got an outdoor terrace on this particular room. It'd be a great suite. Why make it into a yoga studio that's offering free yoga classes for the 200 guest rooms in the hotel. And my premise was this: if you believe that modern, urbane, fresh, natural, and nurturing defines the personality of the hotel we're creating, it also is a shorthand way of understanding the psychology and personality of our core customers. Because I do believe that a great boutique hotel can be defined as you are where you sleep. Like, so we say you are what you eat. Well, in the hotel business, I think that when you choose a hotel that is a personality driven hotel, like a boutique hotel,
yeah,
it's usually because the place you want to get what I call an identity refreshment. You want the place to feel like it's rubbing off on you, so that when you check out 4 days later, in the case of the Hotel Vitale, you'd feel a little bit more modern, urbane, fresh, natural,
yes,
and nurturing.
Yes.
So while 15 or 16 years ago, creating a financial district hotel for business people that was going to have a yoga studio on the top floor with free yoga classes sounded absurd to my investors, because there was never a hotel. They could not find any hotel in the world that was in a financial district that was doing that, nor had any guest ever filled out a guest satisfaction survey for one of our other business class hotels and said, why is it that you don't have a yoga studio in the hotel?
Yes.
Nor did any focus groups ever uncover that this is something that people wanted. When we opened, I asked that my investors, give me 6 months with this yoga studio. If it doesn't work out, we'll turn it into a suite. So a month into it, there had been a front page article in the Wall Street Journal and in the Los Angeles Times about this line out the door of, on the top floor of this hotel in San Francisco called the Hotel Vitale, where there was a collection of people every morning who wanted to take the free yoga class before going off to their business meetings.
Yeah.
So I guess what I would say is the idea that or think about Steve Jobs, go way back and say to the iPod, you know, the people who should have created the iPod should have been Sony. Sony had the Walkman, and the Walkman, the theme of the Walkman was basically, you know, I could go out and, you know, play a CD while I'm walking or running. But so they should have been, you know, it's like having mobile music. Well, unfortunately, they got very fixated on their approach to what mobile music meant. And it turned out it was Steve Jobs and his team at Apple. And frankly, other people who created MP3 players before even Apple.
Yeah.
That said, listen, there's another way to do this. Now, it really wasn't, no focus group uncovered the fact that MP3 players were something that the consumers of the world were asking tech companies to do. So I think what we see over time is that innovation happens when you understand your customers so well that you're able to offer products and services to them that they would love but hadn't imagined.
Yeah.
You know, last thought on this is Henry Ford had a great quote long ago. He said, if I asked my customers what they wanted, they would have said a faster horse. So the truth is that, you know, that was before creating, you know, the Model T Ford, the first car. So, you know, that's, you know, at the end of the day, you got to know your customer well.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It's a fascinating area, this whole sort of area where the hierarchy of needs and the psyche of people sort of meets marketing and how you provide services. I was just wondering if we explore the sort of area of how you create a loyal customer. I know we've already touched on this with sort of like appealing to the sort of the tip of that sort of hierarchy triangle, but what other things can you do to sort of build a loyal customer?
Well, I think, you know, if you think back to the customer pyramid that we talked about a moment ago, meeting expectations at the base of the pyramid for a customer creates satisfaction. Meeting desires, which is the middle of the pyramid, creates commitment, which means loyalty. But creating or meeting unrecognized needs creates evangelists. So I think the thing to know is that customers today are more promiscuous than they were 20 years ago. And I'm not talking about their sexual ways of being.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the fact that customers today have more choices.
Yeah.
And the internet has created a world where customers don't need to be quite as loyal. Therefore, if you are just playing at the bottom of the pyramid and you're just actually going after trying to meet satisfaction, to be honest with you, you are not likely to create a loyal customer. So understanding desires is what creates loyalty. But it creates loyalty until such time as something else comes along and knocks their socks off. And so I think that to know that innovation tends to happen at the peak of the pyramid by addressing an unrecognized need a customer has. And then over time, that unrecognized need becomes an expectation. So if it's expectations, desires, unrecognized need, over time, gravity takes hold. The idea of having Wi-Fi in the air, or 15 years ago, having a TV screen directly in front of you in a plane, these were things that when they were first innovated, or a fax machine. I mean, I can actually send something to someone without actually having to send it, you know, by mail.
Yes.
These are things that were rather innovative, but of course we know what the fax machine, the poor fax machine, isn't loved like it used to be.
Yeah.
And things like Wi-Fi in the air become an expectation. So just know that the best companies tend to actually have a cycle where they actually are constantly creating and addressing the new unrecognized need, knowing that it creates loyalty over time, but that someone else can come along and actually steal their customer if they actually address a more important unrecognized need.
Now, Chip, I know that you've mentioned once or twice, I think in blog posts, about data scientists and hospitality. Why does hospitality need data scientists?
Well, the hospitality industry is well suited to become sort of a lifestyle curator. And what I mean by that is, if you think of companies like Spotify and Amazon and Netflix, they've gotten really good at understanding you as a customer. The more you use them, the more they understand your tastes and preferences, and the more they can deliver on them.
Yeah.
Well, that can be true of a hospitality company as well, especially one like Airbnb, where, you know, choosing one, if you're going to Paris and you've chosen one home or apartment over another, and you've reviewed it, we have a lot of information on you, which means that we can actually help understand your needs and your preferences. And therefore, the next time you're actually going to Copenhagen, we might have enough information to be able to help you with your process of choosing where you're going to stay or what you're going to do, because we now actually offer trips and experiences, things to do while you're in town. So data scientists are in the business of helping to understand how do you create data architecture in such a way that the more you use us as a customer, the better we can actually serve you.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to me, at the end of the day, what we all would love to have is a concierge just following us around and
yes.
helping us, you know, live our lives in such a way that we only are served up choices that sort of fit our tastes and interests. And I think that's over time what the hospitality industry will do.
Mm. Now, I have to ask this. I'm going to go slightly off piece here because I'm going slightly less technical and more biographical. But I mean, you were a CEO for 24 years, weren't you? And then these three youngsters asked you to join Airbnb. I was just curious, sort of, how did you cope in a business where they were sort of half your age?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've been there 4 years now, and this is a question that really sort of defines my next book I'm working on called Modern Elder. I think if I'd gone into Airbnb with the premise that I was the smart old guy, I was 52 when I joined. Mm. The founders were 21 and 23 years younger than me. And the average age of the employee, I was actually twice the average age of the employee at Airbnb when I joined.
Yeah.
I think if I'd gone in thinking I'm just the smart one and the wise one and the person who's going to go ahead and tell you about how the bricks and mortar hospitality or hotel industry works, they would not have listened to me. And I think I learned pretty quickly that I was both a mentor and an intern, because the truth be told, I joined a tech company at age 52 and had never been in a tech company before. So the language they were using and a lot of the thinking they had was very new to me. And so if I thought of myself as the expert and then I was sitting in meetings and not understanding what they were talking about, it would be really difficult, because I would have probably tried to double down on my expertise, which in some cases was exactly what a meeting did not need. Mm. What it needed was me to listen, be a cultural anthropologist, and say, my God, there's something for me to learn here.
Yeah.
So the reason it's worked so well is because I've been able to offer to the company and to the three founders, including the CEO, co-founder Brian Chesky, who's 21 years my junior, I've been able to offer them a lot of wisdom around leadership, strategy, emotional intelligence. What they've been able to offer me is digital intelligence, a finger on the pulse of culture and of where millennials are, and probably where society is going. And so in many ways, and also, you know, what it means to be in a meritocracy, a tech company in many ways is a meritocracy. And so it's not your old school corporate, you know, org chart. Yes. And the corporate ladder.
Yeah.
And so it's been, I think I've learned a lot in the process. And so I think I've obviously offered a lot, but I think, you know, it's been a symbiotic relationship with almost like an intergenerational transfer of wisdom in both directions.
Sounds wonderful. So I suppose it's all to do with sort of remaining humble and being willing to learn, isn't it? From the youngsters, as it were.
For sure. Yes, it's absolutely. It's being willing to learn, knowing that you have something to offer, but they actually have something to offer in return. I hear from so many people my age, you know, people sort of bashing millennials. And it's like, why are you bashing millennials? You know, there's something to be learned from them. And yes, and staying humble. And then at the end of the day, just knowing that, you know, being catalytically curious is something that actually is helpful for not just yourself, but for an organization.
Yeah. Yeah. I suppose it's all true, but never stopping learning as well, isn't it?
Yep. Yep.
Well, Chip, thank you so much for joining us. Before we go, tell our listeners how they can find out more about you and Airbnb.
Sure. Airbnb is pretty simple. It's airbnb.com, and that's BNB, three letters, B, the letter N, and then B.
Yep.
And for me, I'm Chip Conley, chipconley.com. Conley, spelled C-O-N-L-E-Y. And, you know, those are probably the two best ways to learn more about me and Airbnb.
Chips, thanks so much. And thanks for listening, everyone. The show notes are in the usual place, sitedivisibility.com/IMpodcast. If you're enjoying the show, please leave us a review because that helps us to sort of bring you better marketing ideas and advice and keep going. Plus, we're always open to questions or suggestions for future topics to be discussed. So feel free to email us on podcast@sitevisibility.com or tweet us at Site Visibility. If you want to connect with me personally, I'm Dr. Pod, D-O-C-T-O-R-P-O-D on Twitter and LinkedIn. If you want to continue the conversation, you can also do so by joining the Site Visibility group on LinkedIn. Thanks again. So that's all from me, Andy, and it's all from Chip.
Great. I'm enjoying it. Thank you very much.
And thanks for joining us again, Chip. And thanks to everyone, and we'll see you next time on Internet Marketing.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.